Members, I'm going to call the State Government Finance Committee to order. We don't have quorum yet, so we won't be able to move the bill, but I think it would be helpful to start discussion on it. Once we have quorum, we'll approve the minutes and take care of the moving of the bill. With that, members, also, too, in your packets, you'll have a bill that says House File 2585. Please disregard that. The correct bill is being handed out, as well as the bill summary, too, for House File 3585. So with that, Representative Drowsky, if you could start presenting your bill, House File 3585.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and members, House File 3585 is the ratification of, includes the ratification of four union negotiated union contracts. Those would be the AFSCME Council, the AFSCME Council 5, the MAPE contract, Middle Management Association, Minnesota Nurses Association, and then two compensation plans, both the middle man or the excuse me, the commissioner's plan and the managerial compensation plans. Also are three small reform, labor negotiation reform provisions, Madam Chair. Those include one that would require transparency in spending by the unions to show and require that any campaign money that is spent by the union is in one account.
I'm going to pause you right there, Representative Drozdowski. We do have quorum right now. I am going to ask that Representative Detmer, you want to move the minutes for April 21st?
Will do.
Representative Detmer moves the minutes for April 21st. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The minutes for April 21st are adopted. And Representative Drozdowski, I'm going to move House File 3585 before this committee. And if you can proceed, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the reforms include the piece I was talking about, which requires that that the labor organizations spend any campaign money from one account and that the dues are placed in another account on behalf of the members so that campaign spending is completely voluntary for the members and members are not forced to have some of their contributed dollars spent on campaign activities that they may or may not want to have spent on. Also, it will reform the way the vote at the Subcommittee Employee Relations happens. It require actually a majority vote instead of interim approval being granted simply by a tie vote like we currently have. And Madam Chair and members, I haven't seen that anywhere else in the world, but we have that in Minnesota law right now. Thirdly, it provides, and lastly, it provides some transparency in the negotiation process, adds on to our existing provision in law that requires on negotiations to be public meetings, requires that they have advance notice. That's the bill, Madam Chair.
Great. Thank you, Representative Drozdowski. I have a Mr. Side that wishes to testify on this bill. If you can please come down and provide your testimony.
How are you, sir?
Welcome to the committee. If you could please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Elliot Side. I'm the Executive Director of AFSCME Council 5, and we represent 40,000 state, local, and nonprofit workers throughout the state. Thank you for the opportunity to testify this morning, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and members of the committee, good morning. AFSCME Council 5 stands opposed to the amendments to this bill. It's been a history of having clean bills to vote up or down on contracts. This attempts to not only pass the contracts, but then completely alter the process for negotiations, and also sets up state employees as a special class of citizens who have more restrictions on their political rights than the rest of the state has. And that would include local government workers, nonprofit workers, private sector workers. It sets them up as a special class with restricted political activity. So I'd like to comment on a number of provisions in this bill, Madam Chair. First of all, what the bill does is it changes the interim agreement process. Negotiations take place over a very long time. They are negotiated in good faith, according to the Public Employee Labor Relations Act, between the governor and the bargaining units. The current procedure calls for negotiations to be completed, tentative agreements reached, and usually, just to be real specific and practical about it, part of a tentative agreement is both sides agree to recommend that to their respective bodies. In this case, you're part of the employer's process, and we do it in the union process. We did our end. We do our end. We recommend it. We take it out for ratification, and these contracts have passed by large majorities in all the bargaining units. What this bill seeks to do is to change the process then for what happens next. Currently, what's supposed to happen is then what does happen is it goes to the Commission on Employee Relations, the SER, and it has to be approved, disapproved, or if it can't be approved or disapproved and there's a tie vote, it's implemented. These contracts are negotiated in good faith, and they operate for 2 year periods. As it is now, even on the implementation, under the current system, there's retroactivity involved, because by the time the 30 days takes place after the legislature gets it and after they've had a chance to review it, and if they vote it up, it goes into practice. If they vote it down, it doesn't. And if they reach no agreement, which is what happened here, then they go into practice. Even then, the raises to the employees in the first year of the contract didn't happen until, I believe, somewhere around November or December, before those July 1 raises went into place. So already there's an extensive period between the end of contract bargaining, the ratification of the agreement, and then the implementation of the collective bargaining agreement. The provision that Representative Drazkowski is proposing could delay that up for 2 years while you all debate these things here in this body and the other body. And as we know, these things can take quite a time in the legislature. Meanwhile, the workers and the employer have negotiated this in good faith, and the provisions of the contract have no ability to go into effect. So we think this is an unnecessary stalling of the outcome of negotiations. I want to be clear, under the current process, as you are doing right now, you take the contracts into the legislature, you vote for them. You vote them up or you vote them down. If you vote them down, as director of the union, I understand and my members understand that contract's voted down and we have to negotiate again. If you vote it up, then the contract's implemented. So the issue of majority vote, which Representative Drazkowski raised in a prior hearing, is resolved by the fact that the legislature will either vote it up or vote it down. And that's the current procedure. So we think this is unnecessary, it's dangerous, and it's distracting from the process. Secondly, retroactivity. Retroactivity in this bill, the Representative Drazkowski then says we can't negotiate retroactivity. Madam Chair, members of this committee, as I pointed out to you, retroactivity is involved even in the current agreement, because by the time it's implemented by the executive branch after the SER has dealt with it, it goes back a number of months. And Commissioner Tilson pointed out last time, and I thought quite rightly, that if in fact we can't negotiate retroactivity, when in fact both sides have decided for whatever reason that the contract negotiations need to continue, the timing of negotiations is determined not by some externality, but by the issues that are being resolved and trying to be resolved. And I want to make a point about that, that most of what we do in negotiations is a very bombastic, it's not even terribly interesting to most people. What we're trying to do is deal with real problems that people have in the workplace, what the employer's problems are in the workplace, what the workers' problems are in the workplace. Those are the things that we try to resolve in negotiations. Sometimes, for reasons beyond anyone's control, you end up negotiating past the expiration date of the contract, and you agree to continue on with the contract. I should point out that in our contracts, that either side, so I want to make this clear, can terminate a collective bargaining agreement with 10 days' notice. The employer can do that. The union can do it. It's part of our collective bargaining agreement. So the notion that the agreements just continue ad infinitum without parties agreeing to do to continue the contracts is specious, because either side may decide to terminate the agreement. But in any case, once you get past the date, if in fact we can't negotiate retroactivity, And I guess Representative Drazkowski feels the only solution for us is to go on strike. And there's only been two strikes in this state since Pella was amended in 1980. That's 36 years. There have been two strikes. Most contracts, overwhelmingly number of contracts, are settled voluntarily and then dealt with by this legislature. Taking away retroactivity as part of employment conditions that we can negotiate practically demands that if a timely agreement's not reached, that the union has no alternative and the workers have no alternative but to take a strike if they expect to get any kind of increase on a timely basis. So that this, too, is an attempt to restrict and change the process in a way that's detrimental to workers, and I would suggest detrimental to the employer as well. On public meetings, I said this in the last committee, and I admitted that my example was a little over the top, but I'm starting to think maybe it's not. Representative Drazkowski is saying that the negotiations should be open to the public. And every round of negotiations that everyone should be involved in that. Well, that's great. I mean, the union and the employer can do that, and if we need to do it, I would suggest you all need to do it. I would suggest, Madam Chair and members, I've been around this place since 1981. There's all kinds of things that go on in offices, rooms, the basements, all kinds of places the public can't get to. Discussions, negotiations, that's how real deals are made around here. And yet the public doesn't get to see that. So I think if you're going to amend the Public Employee Labor Relations Act to say that negotiations ought to be like that, then I would suggest that the negotiations in the legislature ought to be like that. That all these rooms in this building, the Senate building, the Capitol, should have audio, should have video. The press should be invited into every room. Everybody should get to see everything that actually goes on in here all the time. And I'd like to see what kind of compliance and deals that you can make here to reach an outcome for a successful legislative session if you yourselves put yourselves under that process. I don't think this is an attempt to bring this to the public eye. I think it's an attempt to make negotiations a circus and a show, any more than it would make this place a circus and a show if you did that in every room in this Capitol, in this office building, the other office building in the Capitol. There are times in negotiations where you're trying to figure out problems. The purpose of being able to negotiate without a huge audience is so that the parties don't posture, so that the parties can take whatever political posturing they think they need to make for their constituencies off the table, and certainly you all understand that, and make that an opportunity to solve a problem together. Because as I said earlier, that's what most of negotiations are, problem solving. Not bombastic speeches, not banging on the table, not all the things people think negotiations are about. They're really about problem solving. So that's another area I think this Representative Drazkowski goes way over the top. But if you do it, we would appreciate on behalf of Aspen Council 5 if you would also extend that provision to all of you and everyone in this Capitol. We think it would be better for the public then to see everything that goes on around here. And then in terms of the provision, the American Legislative Exchange Council provision that Representative Drazkowski has put in on political activities, what it does is it sets up state employees as a special class of citizens. It would be the only class of citizens in the state who are subject to hard money provisions, not soft money provisions. Under the current elections law, this is a soft money state. And you all know what that means. What that means is that that corporations, the unions, that we can, and in our case, with Democratic votes of executive boards, of members, budget certain amounts of money, as long as the money doesn't collect any interest, for politics. What this says is that only state employees will be treated as a special class and have to do their process in a different way. The other thing it does in this amendment is it restricts the activities of state employees. Basically, it says state employees ought not have the same constitutional rights as every other American citizen and every other citizen in Minnesota to participate in the political process. I'm not sure what Representative Drazkowski is frightened of here. State employees are citizens, taxpayers, your neighbors, some of them are your relatives, your friends. They participate in our communities, in the politics of our community, in a robust way. I can't imagine what problem that is. We need more people involved in the political process. What Representative Drazkowski's bill does is set up a separate special class of state employees who have a different system for campaign contributions, and then also a different system that restricts their rights to participate fully in the political processes of our state. I'm wondering if the suggestion is that somehow state employees are dangerous or criminals instead of some of the hardest working citizens in the state. So these are some of the provisions of the bill. And, you know, I would also suggest that we go about business the way business should be gotten about. If you don't want to vote for the contracts, vote them down. If you want to vote for the contracts, vote them up. But do it cleanly. Don't attach all this change in process. Do that as a separate bill. Do that as a separate bill, and let's have that discussion. Let's have that debate. Because from the union's perspective, from AFSCME Council 5's perspective, from our state employees' perspective, this is nothing more than a continuation of the war on workers, the war on public employees, the war that to restrict workers' voices in their workplace. I can't imagine what's dangerous about it. Representative Drazkowski, like Governor Walker, apparently is worried that public employees shouldn't have all these rights, the rights to have a voice in the workplace, the right to bargain over their wages, hours, and working conditions, the right to bargain over their health care. And you know, I think that it's about time that we stop trying to treat state employees and public workers like they're the enemy of the citizens. We have one of the leanest state workforces in the nation. We are fourth in nation in leanness in terms of our state workforce. And I challenge anyone on this committee or anywhere in the legislature to tell me that the state employees of this state don't deliver the greatest public services in this whole nation. And why legislative session after legislative session, this war on workers, as articulated in this amendment by Representative Drazkowski, has to continue. It seems to me unnecessary, capricious, and an attack on people working. I've heard over and over again, Madam Chair, members of the committee, and Representative Drazkowski, that government ought to, from the majority, that the government ought to act like a business. I'd like to know what business, if it's SuperValu, if it's Cargill, if it's United Healthcare, it's American Express, whatever the business is, Target Corporation, constantly attacks its own workforce and then goes out to the public and says, buy my goods. That's what happens around here. The state workforce, a dedicated, hardworking, dignified group of people who constantly try to provide services in the light of shortages or anything else going on, who I would describe to you as everyday heroes, have to face a legislative attack on their rights, their voice in the workplace, every single session. It needs to end, ladies and gentlemen, Madam Chair. It needs to end.
Thank you.
AFSCME Council 5 opposes the amendment by Representative Drazkowski, asks you to produce a clean bill. Thank you very much for your time, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you, Mr. Side. I just have one question for Chair Drazkowski. As I understand it, this doesn't include any of the retroactivity language. Is that correct?
That's correct, Madam Chair. Both the special time off provision that Mr. Saeed referred to and the retroactivity provision have both been removed in the current engrossment.
Okay. Members, questions for the testifier? I have Representative Nelson.
Well, Madam Chair, I was just wondering. I had submitted an amendment, and I just got a note here passed from Adam that it has been, that you do have my amendment. That's
correct.
That was my original question.
Yep. We had a little snafu this morning. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chair Drazkowski, I'm looking at the context of the bill, and I guess my first question of a few is, did you approve the contracts that were put before the committee that you chair?
Chair Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Albright, I'm Vice Chair of the Subcommittee on Employer Relations, and these contracts received a tie vote in the subcommittee. And so under current law, what happens when you have a tie vote of the subcommittee is they are given interim approval 30 days later. And that's what they have now, is they have interim approval awaiting legislative final approval.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so in the context of a tie vote, and walk me through again, because I apologize for being late. Traffic was a little bit wild today. The process of a contract being a tie vote, what is the process after that tie vote is consummated if we're not in session? Could you walk me through that process?
Chair Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Albright. So the Subcommittee on Employer Relations is entertaining a a negotiated contract agreement as one of its meetings during the interim. If there's a tie vote on whether or not to provide interim approval for those contracts, then it ends in a tie vote, the meeting's adjourned, and 30 days later, those contracts receive interim approval according to law. And so those contracts go into effect 30 days later until or unless the legislature disapproves of them.
Representative Albright.
Madam Chair, and under the provisions in your bill, how would that be affected in terms of the negotiation process that Mr. Saeed is talking about?
Representative, or Chair Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Albright, that provision would have no effect on the negotiation process whatsoever.
And then just to clarify, members, I was hoping that this would be questions for Mr. Saeed, because then we are going to ask if there's any other testifiers. So, Representative Albright.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Saeed, you talk about a special class of citizens based upon the nature of the employees. I'm just wondering if there's any relevance or difference between a public employee and a private employee, particularly as it would relate to the subject matter that we deal with here on a day-to-day basis.
Mr. Saeed.
Madam Chair, Representative Albright. I believe it would be, because under the current processes, under the election laws in the state, the provision for raising funds for elections is a soft money process, not only for unions but for corporations, for the state, so that it would create a special class of state employees who would have a different system of fundraising than any other group of workers in the state. Local government, private, any other group of workers in the state would be under a different provision than the state employees on that. And so yes, I do think it would create a special class of workers, which is why I said that. Madam Chair and Representative Albright, in reference to your other question too, it would definitely alter the process, because a contract could go up to 2 years without being implemented while the legislature decides if they would vote on it or not. So, Madam Chair, Representative Albright, I think two things. One, that this provision does alter the collective bargaining process in a fundamental way, and also the implementation of contracts in a fundamental way. And secondly, yes, it does set up a special class, Madam Chair, Representative Albright, of state employees as different from any other citizen in how they raise political dollars.
Representative Albright.
Madam Chair, Mr. Saeed, are you familiar with any other committee structure or organizational structure where a tie vote affirms the decisions of the committee?
Mr. Saeed.
Madam Chair, Representative Albright, the Public Employee Labor Relations Act was created in 1973, I believe. This provision's been in effect that long, and it was done that way so that after good faith negotiations, things wouldn't artificially be elongated while this process took place. I would add, Madam Chair and Representative Albright, that the Public Employee Labor Relations Acts, which are state-based acts in different states, vary from state to state. I can tell you that in some states, the legislature has no approval process for contract negotiations. That takes place between the governor and the public employee organizations, and that the governor then includes in their budget money to for those negotiations. In some states, there's no right to strike, and so the process is completely different, and there's no public employee or state employee relations committee. So every state has a different way of bargaining, and some states don't involve legislative approval, some do, and they do it in various ways. So I'm not sure that there's an accurate comparison of that, sir.
Okay. Just a couple of things that I'll let it go. Representative Luman.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, and thank you for coming today. My question has to do with Article 2, Section 2 and Article 2, and I ask this question because of contacts I've received from people in my district. I certainly see now, after late yesterday and this morning calls I've gotten, a separation between the actual workers, which I agree is a good product, and the union. And every contact I've gotten, without one exception, agreed with the provision of the voluntary contribution for political. You have members in your group that think differently and would like to exercise that individual right and feel like they're coerced into it. So a while ago, I was looking at some of this when I was doing tax returns for my sons, and I noticed that on Schedule A, which is where you itemize deduct, on line 20, and maybe this was brought up earlier, and I apologize for being late because I was taking one of those calls, those political contributions that are part of the union dues are deductible on your federal tax return, and then are also then therefore deductible and not subject to Minnesota income tax. And that was, I just saw just union dues on there. I didn't see, there's nowhere where a political contribution can be deducted tax-wise anywhere else. So your concern about a special classification, well, in some ways that already exists.
Mr. Sy.
Madam Chair, Representative, a couple things I would like to comment on that. Number one, we currently have a situation where if you're a dues-paying member as opposed to a fair share a fee payer, if you're a dues-paying member and you would like to get a political rebate once a year, you can apply for political rebate. We have to calculate those according to a case called Hudson. We calculate those from the bottom up every year. We know exactly what percentage of the dues is spent on that. We have to audit those results. Those results are sent as part of our LM2, sent into the Labor Department, it's called the Hudson decision, sir, Madam Chair, sir. So workers can apply for political rebate if they would like to get a political rebate, and then we issue that political rebate. They can do that both the state and at the national level. For fee payers, when we charge a fee for the cost of representation, we already take out the political part because, again, under Hudson, and we can only charge up to 85% here in Minnesota, and we never even really normally get to that. Because we also have to do the Hudson calculation, and we take the political money out at the front end for a fee payer. So that's 2 points I wanted to make. The other points I want to make are our executive board votes on all these things. We have a Democratic with a small d organization. We have a constitution. We have rules by which we have to do these things. Our PAC process is part of that constitution. These things have to be approved by elected representatives of workers. And I would take and we're audited by the Labor Department. We've been audited by the legislative auditor here on our fair share process. We've been audited by the Labor Department. We do our own audits. We have unqualified audits. We have no management letters. We are one of the most scrupulously, wonderfully, and I'm very proud of this organization, clean organization, in terms of how we report our things, our transparencies. So if members disagree, it's because they know that what's going on, and that's how come they know that they disagree. But I would share, Madam Chair and Representative, one other piece about this. It's clear today, for instance, I don't agree with Representative Drazkowski about this amendment. My tax dollars pay for the, just like anyone else's tax dollars, pay for the members of this committee and the members of the legislature. I think under that, maybe, should I have to get to deduct my taxes so that I can cut out the amount that goes to paying for the state legislature because I don't agree with the majority in the House? I don't think we could have representative government that way. And I think this is an attempt to destroy representative government, Madam Chair, a representative in the union. As far as taxes go, I've been doing this for 38 years, and I've never deducted a single dollar of my dues or anything else related to the union on my taxes.
Representative Lynn.
Final question, Madam Chair. So yes or no question then. The political portion of those union dues are basically subsidized by other taxpayers then because they're deductible under Schedule A on a tax return. Would that be correct?
Madam Chair.
The political aspect or the political component of the union dues are in fact deductible indirectly. Well, they're deductible on the Minnesota tax return because they're deductible under Schedule A, and so it's being subsidized. The solution to your having to go along with the majority would make sense if when someone becomes, for instance, a school teacher, and I'm not going to open this can of worms, but I'm going to bring it up, that they have to become a member of the union, and there's And I didn't actually, I've never gotten any calls, complaints about that, but you're, what you're talking about is right there then, that people should have the right to vote with their feet.
Mr. Seid.
Madam Chair, Representative, first of all, I'm not an expert on tax law. I'm not aware that my dues have never been deducted under my taxes. So I'm not aware of that. I don't know how, why I would do that. I'm not, I've never been told by my accountant I can do that or anything. So that's okay. I've never even done it once. I'm not aware of my staff doing it or anybody else. And as far as being a part of the union, there is no compulsory union membership in Minnesota or anywhere else in the public sector. People have a right to be members or not be members. There's a duty of fair representation that the union has an obligation, Madam Chair and Representative, to do, if it's negotiations, it's grievances, arbitrations, without a view as if the person's a member or a non-member, and we have that obligation to carry out that duty. And so people who don't want to be members become fair share, and they pay the fees of representation. Madam Chair, Representative Drazkowski's original bill did include eliminating fair share and dues deduction. It later was amended in the previous committee not to include those provisions, and then amended further in this committee, obviously. So I, frankly, given the level of regulation, I can tell you this, Madam Chair and Representative, there is no more regulated part of our society than the labor union. We audit ourselves every year pursuant to our Constitution, and we hire outside auditors to do that. We've been audited by the legislative auditor, and I would encourage you to look at that report, because Aspen Council 5 does their work according to law and does it accurately and perfectly. We've been audited by the Labor Department, and have and if you want to know what that audit says, just go to the Labor Department work site, and you can get all that information. Everything about us is regulated. I've often made an internal comment that according to the LM2 report we send to the Labor Department, which is a very thick report that has to be audited, including the Hudson calculations and all of it, that the Labor Department knows how many times I walk from my office to the men's room in our building back and forth, because that's the level of regulation that we have. I mean, we are really a tightly regulated organization. We're a transparent organization, and internally we're a democratic organization. And we are not separate from the workers. The workers and the union are one thing. The workers want a voice in the workplace. That's what the union is. It's the instrument of that voice.
Okay, members, we are approaching the 9 o'clock hour very quickly. At 9 o'clock, members will need to go over to the House floor. We could either come back tonight after session is done, which I'm guessing will probably take a while, given the amount of amendments. I've also reserved Friday for continuing this conversation, if need be. After we have Mr. Seid give testimony, I'm going to ask other people if they wish to testify to this bill. And then we will have the amendment, and then we will be voting on the bill. So with that, I have Representative Petersburg on the list. Representative Petersburg, question for Mr. Seid.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Seid, thank you for coming and sharing your passion for this position. You represent that very well. The question that I have is in regards to, if you know this answer, in the private sector, there are unions as well. Are the unions involved in the influencing and trying to influence the election of the board of directors in most cases?
Mr. Seid.
Madam Chair, as a matter of fact, the National AFL-CIO has what they call a pension investment project. And so public workers invest money in their pensions. Those pensions make investments. And indeed, there have been organized efforts by trade unions for a number of years now to affect how corporations do their business and the kind of practices they have, including elections for board of directors. That type of process is done organized nationally, sir, Madam Chair, sir, by the AFL-CIO. It's an investment unit of the AFL-CIO to see how pension dollars are being invested in corporations and what those corporate practices are, if they're doing a lot of unfair labor practices, if they have lack of health and safety, a lack of health and safety in the workplace, or other things that are offensive to workers' rights in the workplace. And then indeed, the AFL-CIO has organized private sector and public sector unions to try to affect votes at board of directors meetings, at stockholders meetings, to do that. That's a unit of the National AFL-CIO, Madam Chair. Representative
Petersburg.
Thank you. And so from what I get from that is that there's a special unit of that particular group that is doing that, and so therefore it must be separated out. Is that correct?
No, sir. Madam Chair, Representative, I mean, we pay per capita tax to the AFL-CIO. It's just part of the AFL-CIO's day-to-day activities. The affiliated unions want this to be done because we have too many private corporations that are not acting in the interest of the people who do the work. Workers provide services, they produce products, and they need to be treated with dignity and respect. When they're not treated with dignity and respect, it's the role of the unions to try to then hold the people who are making those decisions that aren't treating workers with dignity and respect accountable for those. And they do that in this case, the case that, Madam Chair, that you've asked about, a representative, through this, there's no separate money. The money isn't separated. This is an activity, as a matter of fact, that we don't have to do that. Straight out of the dues money that's being used to affect corporate activity. And it's done because we invest our pension dollars. The people in this room who are private and public workers take money out of their pocket and invest it in their pension. Their employers often put in money as well, or even more money. And then that money's invested in corporations to get a return. So those workers then want to make sure that the places where they're making the investments are treating workers with dignity and respect. And when they don't, then activities are taking place in a cooperative way between the institutions to try to affect those changes in the private and stockholder situations. So, in fact, that does go on, sir. Madam Chair, sir.
If I could follow up one more.
Is it a question or a comment?
A question.
Representative Petersburg.
The question that I think you sidestepped the issue very well, and that I appreciate that. Let me ask it a little different way. Of the union dues that you're aware of, how much in the private sector is used towards influencing the election of directors?
Mr. Side, briefly.
I don't know the budget of the AFL-CIO, so I don't know how much of that investment unit, how much is going into that. I know it's a huge project that took a lot of years to develop, because often private companies have proprietary information, and sometimes it's very hard to find out what those companies are actually doing. So I have no idea how much of AFL-CIO, national AFL-CIO dollars go to that. But these are efforts that we all do together. We pay for together through the national AFL-CIO, and we cooperate on together when those issues arise at stockholder meetings throughout the nation.
I can continue on later.
Thank you. Representative Kahn.
Yes,
to the microphone.
Yes. Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'd like to give a personal example that I know about how fair share works. I don't know if any of you remember the story of the Mankato football coach who was accused of using his phone to take pictures of his kids, identical to many pictures we have of our kids and grandkids and so forth, that were considered pornographic, and was fired. And the IFO took up his case, and the IFO representative remembered that I had done a law that specifically allowed personal use of state information systems, and took it to court, went to an arbitrator. I was proud to say that the arbitrator report was essentially my testimony, and the sequence. He was not a member of the IFO, but he paid his fair share, and the moral of this story is that he did join the union after this happened. So fair share works very well.
Is there anybody else that wishes to testify to this bill? Please come down, state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Side.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Brad Lepto. I'm the Chief of Staff for the Minnesota AFL-CIO, which is State Federation of Unions that represent over 300,000 members, including state employees. The main thing I want to just, it's an interesting day because April 28th is Workers' Memorial Day. There are ceremonies throughout the state to honor workers that have died on the job, including construction workers and state workers. If you think about all the maintenance and the construction, but the maintenance that's done on the roads and state employees that are killed, I know, you know, I certainly don't know as many state employees as Mr. Seid, but I do know hundreds of state employees. The ones that I talk to are just, they're tired of always having to defend themselves. So the Minnesota AFL-CIO opposes the other amendments that certainly Mr. Seid was very eloquent on in this bill, and would just ask to have the contracts voted on at the legislature, just as a clean bill. But I talked to a number of union members in this room, which represent the cross section. It's not just state workers in this room. It's from young union members to retired union members here. And I've talked to a lot of them that say, sure, we're just doing this, just this little bit to state employees right now. What's next? We've gone through this a few years ago, fighting right to work, pure right to work in this state. I would imagine if we look across the river to Wisconsin, it started bit by bit. And now it's completely right to work. So we will oppose this, the MS vote, ask for a clean contract vote, and we will continue to do so every day that it comes up here. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Leto. Is there anyone else that wishes to testify to this bill? Questions for Mr. Leto? Seeing none, we have an amendment to the bill. If the pages can hand out the amendment, or somebody. Representative Nelson, I believe that this is your amendment. I think
yes,
it's pretty
Madam
straightforward.
Chair.
Why don't you describe it?
Madam Chair, first I'd like to ask for a roll call on the amendment.
Representative Nelson asked for a roll call. Representative Nelson, to
And
your
Madam
amendment.
Chair, I don't have it in front of me, but the amendment I know by heart is basically the deleting of Article 2 of the bill that's before us, which is where Representative Druskowski describes this as reforms to the collective bargaining position or the collective bargaining provisions in our state. Others, and I myself, look at that as gutting the rights of our state employees. We've had a lot of discussion here about it. Mr. Seid has given a very eloquent and passionate argument against these provisions, and that's what the bill, that's what the amendment does. And Madam Chair, I'll stand for questions.
Great. Members, questions for Representative Nelson? I think we all know it's pretty straightforward. Our Chair Jaskowski, do you have any comments?
Just oppose the amendment, Madam Chair.
Okay. To that, the roll call. Representative Anderson S. No. Howe.
Nay.
Johnson.
Yes.
Albright.
No.
Anderson M.
No.
Carlson.
Aye.
Detmer.
No.
Earhart. Kahn.
No.
No. Yes.
Yes.
Oh. Lane.
Yes.
Woonan.
No.
Nash.
Nope.
Nelson.
Yes.
Petersburg.
No.
Peel.
No.
Rumbeck.
No.
And Schultz. On a 10 no's and 6 ayes, the amendment does not pass. Representative Johnson, we can continue and be done with the bill, but I need your permission to do that, basically. Otherwise, we're coming back tonight.
Madam Chair, we can proceed.
Okay. So with that, Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like a roll call on the bill.
Okay. Members to the bill, there's been a roll call that's been requested. Renew my motion to move House File 3585 to the Ways and Means Committee. On the roll call.
Representative Anderson S.
Yes.
Howe.
Yes.
Johnson.
No.
Albright.
Yes.
Anderson M.
Yes.
Carlson.
No.
Detmer.
Yes.
Earhart. Kahn.
No.
Lane.
No.
Newman.
Yes.
Nash.
Yes.
Nelson.
No.
Petersburg.
Yes.
Pugh.
Yes.
Rennbeck.
Yes.
And Schultz.
No.
On a vote of 10 to 6, the bill is passed and referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Thank you, Chair Jaworski. With that, members, we are adjourned. We have session.